Hello and welcome to Car Talk on National Public Radio with us, Click and Clack, the Tappet Brothers. And we're broadcasting this week from the combination auto repair shop and charm school here at Car Talk Plaza.
See, it turns out that these combinations are not so unusual.
Yeah?
Thousands of pieces of mail addressed to both of us. I mean, did you read any of your mail? No.
You just give it to me.
I do all the work. You come in and that's it.
Yeah, well, actually, you want to give a little background here?
I mentioned a few weeks ago that I read something from a menu in our favorite town. Where's Claude's live?
Unadilla.
Unadilla, New York. Right. There was a combination restaurant or something, a furniture store and undertaker, funeral parlor. And it turns out...
And you thought it was interesting.
I thought it was an interesting juxtaposition.
Yes.
And here's one from Ray Poff says, you commented on the combination of funeral parlor and furniture business. This is not unusual. Here's one. Rudy's Welding Service and Cold Beer.
You know, if you're a welder, you need a cold beer every once in a while. That's probably how it got started.
Here's another one. Out in Mokena, Illinois, there's a place called Al's Shoe Repair and Tropical Fish, says Matt Cox from, out there.
I like that.
Sure. And lastly, just to add a little bit of erudition to the little discussion we're having here.
Yes.
Here's a letter from one of the most brilliant people in the world, a PhD, Johanna Miller Lewis, assistant professor of history at the University of Arkansas. Oh, she's probably going to be a cabinet member.
Oh, yeah.
She's from Little Rock.
Yes.
It says, I was listening to your most excellent program. She is intelligent. Your most excellent program last weekend.
Perceptive, too.
When I heard the letter from the gentleman wondering about the combination furniture store and undertaker.
I love it when you do the French part.
As a college professor who's most interested in broadening the knowledge of Americans everywhere, I must respond. The practice of combining furniture and undertaking dates back to the 18th century.
Sonia Henny's tutu.
Where cabinet makers made furniture and coffins, and as burial practices became more formalized without increasing the demand for coffins, these artisans saw the opportunity to augment their cabinet making by offering additional funereal and burial services. And she closes.
And a layaway plan.
And she closes with, you can get a layaway plan in both departments.
Yes, of course.
Which layaway plan do you want? And Johanna closes by saying, thank you for the opportunity to use my PhD in a really important capacity. You are right, Dr. Lewis.
Are you ready for a call?
Yes, 1-800-332-9287.
Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hello.
Hi, who's this?
My name's Charlie. I'm calling from Buffalo, New York.
Hi, Charlie. How are you?
Just fine. How about you guys?
Oh. Fine.
Dandy.
Wait, do they call you Chuck?
No, they don't.
Oh, then we can't say what's up, Chuck.
No, you can't.
Oh, what's up, Charlie?
Well, hopefully nothing. But I have a 1986 Buick Century with a 3.8 liter engine in it.
Mm-hmm.
It's got 87,000 miles on it. My wife and I, we bought the car just under 3 years ago, and we've put about half of those miles on.
Yeah.
I take the car to a quick oil change place every 3,000 miles, faithfully. The last two times I've gone, they've told me that when they're refilling the engine with oil, that it takes too long for the oil to drain down into the engine.
I mean, that's not good, but it's good they told you.
And after the second to last time I took it in, I tried one of those 5-minute oil flushes right before the last oil change, and no improvement. I was just wondering if this is something I have to worry about, or if something I can let go, or...
Well, I remember this was the basis of a puzzler that we used some time ago. And it was a fellow that I don't remember the vehicle, but it was...
I think it was an 86 Buick Century.
Something like that, with about 85K on it.
Yeah.
And he would drive, he would leave the house on a journey, and before leaving, he would check the dipstick, and he would read the amount of oil in the engine. It would read full. He'd go along maybe 100 or 200 miles. He'd have it checked when he bought gas and stopped for a haircut. And the dipstick would read down 2 quarts. He said, oh, my God, I burned 2 quarts of oil in 100 miles.
And he put 2 quarts in.
Dutifully.
Right.
Put 2 quarts in. When he returned at the end of his journey and checked it the next morning, it was 2 quarts overfilled.
Right.
And what's happening is the oil is getting pumped up into the valve area,
right,
on top of the cylinder, and isn't draining down.
Right.
Because the drain holes are plugged up with crud. That's C-R-U-D.
And that means that maybe you have been dutiful about changing the oil, but whoever you bought the car from probably weren't.
Right. Right. Well, that's what I was afraid of.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Even if they were, it's very possible that if they weren't good about changing things like the PCV valve.
Uh-huh.
Because what the PCV valve does is allows the crankcase to ventilate, and if the crank doesn't ventilate, if the whole crankcase area doesn't ventilate, you begin to build up a thick sludge, and it's very easy to plug up those return holes.
Right. Yeah.
Another possibility, do you know if the heads have ever been taken off of this engine?
I do not know if the heads have been taken off.
This is a GM.
I suspect not.
It's a GM. When were the heads taken off?
No, I'm sure. No. I bet that they weren't.
They
taken
probably
off.
Weren't. But another possibility is if people do even taking off. And I didn't mean the heads. I meant the valve cover gasket.
I can't make a guess at that either.
Yeah. Well, you're going to do it. Are you one to get out there and roll up the sleeves and dive right in?
Not with this great big engine stuffed in that small engine compartment.
All right, then take it to your mechanic.
Yeah.
Tell him you want to take the valve covers off, and when he does that, oil's going to pour out all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to make a mess. It's going to pour down all over the exhaust.
Unless he lets it sit overnight.
Mm-hmm.
You might want to let him do that, because he won't like it when the oil gets all over his shoes.
I wouldn't even tell him. See the look of surprise in his face. And he's going to have to ream these passages out and clean them out and get all that junk out of there, at least as much of it as he can, that flush you through in there. You'd need 100 cans of that.
Uh-huh.
And he's going to have to do it manually with a reamer. Get all that stuff out of there, and then change the oil and hope that it stays pretty clean.
Right.
But you should do it, because eventually you'll get, it'll be disgusting.
Well, eventually, couldn't the engine seize eventually?
Well, if all the oil could fit up there under the valve cover, then that would be true.
Okay.
But it can't. But what it means is, as you're driving, you're probably always driving 2 quarts shy of full, because there's 2 quarts at least sitting up there.
Yeah.
I mean, even at best, there's always 1 quart up there, even when things are working correctly.
Yeah.
There's at least 1 quart up there, so you may have 3 quarts up there.
Okay.
Yeah. Fix it before you wreck the engine.
All right.
Probably too late.
Very subject matter was the topic of a puzzler in the recent past, huh?
Yeah. Pretty good, huh?
I missed it.
Well, you missed it. That was 8 years ago, Charlie. Don't feel bad.
Don't feel bad.
See you later. Thanks for your call.
Thank you.
All righty.
Bye-bye.
1-800-332-9287. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi.
Hi, who's this?
My name is Beth.
Hi, Beth, where are you from?
Niwot, Colorado.
You have to spell it for me so I can get it in my mind here.
N-I-W-O-T.
Just like it sounds.
Yeah. I'm calling not because I have a problem, but because I'd like some input from you on a question my husband and I have been discussing.
Yeah.
He recently installed a block heater in his truck, which he doesn't drive all that often, but felt that it would be good for his truck. And then we started talking about the possibility of installing one in our 90 Toyota Camry wagon.
Mm-hmm.
And he said that the hardest time for the engine is when you're just turning on the engine and it's cold, and that's what ages it so quickly.
What a brilliant man your husband is.
Oh, he'll be happy to hear you tell him that he's brilliant. But he thought if we had a block heater in there that the engine wouldn't, you know, have so much wear and tear because it would always be warmed up.
He is absolutely right.
He's right.
He is right.
You didn't think he was right, huh, Beth?
I really didn't know. We just wondered if it would be worth it in Colorado to do that.
Well, I mean, truly, what you want to do is not warm up the coolant, which is what a block heater does, but you want to warm up the oil.
Well, by warming up the block, you do warm up the coolant.
Right.
The oil, rather.
That's right, but only incidentally. If you really wanted to reduce the engine, the engine wear, you would heat up the oil directly with there are things called, believe it or not, electric dipsticks.
Yeah. My brother actually has used rather successfully a one grill hibachi, which he lights every morning at about, what, 4 a.m.? You're right out there?
I usually go out a couple of times during the night and stoke up the fires, and I put it right underneath the car.
Do you grill hamburgers on it while you're doing that as well?
Sure. No, but he's right. I mean, heating up everything does, in fact, reduce wear. And if you wanted to keep the car forever, this would be the way to do it. If you only wanted to keep it for like 120,000, 130,000 miles, I would say don't bother.
Don't bother.
How cold is it in Niwot?
Well, we've been having a pretty cold winter. Normally, it's Normally it gets down into the 20s into the 20s in the winter, but it's been really cold. In fact, it's going to be down in the low teens and
above
zero, but generally that's not the case.
You need it. You need it. If it goes into the 20s, you need it.
Yeah, no, it's actually a wonderful thing to do.
Will it make the car go longer than 120,000 miles?
200,000, guaranteed minimum, otherwise my brother pays.
And he might as well take it to the dealer, because when it blows out on the interstate and the engine overheats and you melt it...
That will be bad.
It'll be better that they had done the work and not you.
I'll tell him.
See you, Beth. Thanks for your call.
Good luck.
Thanks a lot.
Bye-bye.
So long.
We'll be right back with the answer to the puzzler right after these very important messages.
Well, Thomas, it's time for that part of the program that you dread. The part where I demonstrate your feeble little memory.
It has to do with the puzzler. I do remember that.
Yes.
It has to do with the puzzler.
Yeah, well, that's it.
That's it.
Too late.
I can't do it.
And I've given away all of Dougie's salary for the next 6 months, so I can't even bribe you with that. Here it is.
Okay.
Many years ago, a woman came into the garage right after a snowstorm. She said,
this is the old puzzler. We're not doing the new puzzler
yet. No, this is the part of the show where we do the old puzzler.
The old puzzler.
Later on.
I didn't know the show actually had parts.
Anyway, she said her husband had recently tuned up the family car. It was some late 70s GM car. I don't remember what it was. An ROC. Regular old car. And she said that ever since he tuned it up, it ran terribly in the snow. She said, not only does it not go well, she said, anymore, it doesn't stop. I don't know what's wrong. I think he must have done something when he tuned up. He must have done something to my snow tires. Maybe there's something wrong with the tires. Check my tires out. There's too much air in them or too little air, or they're no longer good snow tires. I need to buy new snow tires. What did he possibly do wrong?
What a crummy. You actually used this on the air, and I was here with you, and I allowed this?
You were holding your nose at the time.
Oh, my God.
All right, wise guy, what did he do?
I don't know.
Yes. Well, in his...
He got it idling too fast.
Well, and the reason that it happens on this kind of a car, wouldn't happen on most modern front-wheel drive cars, is that on rear-wheel drive cars, the brakes are proportioned so that when you step on the brake, most of the braking force goes to the front wheels, and the back wheels don't get any braking action until you've applied considerable pressure to the pedal.
Yes.
Okay, so when the back wheels, like on an ROC, are getting power, which they would get from the engine that was especially idling too fast.
And not getting much pressure from the master cylinder.
They would continue to spin, making the car difficult to stop and also making it difficult for the car to go, because as soon as you took your foot off the brake, the rear wheels would begin to spin because of the additional idle speed.
Which is, by the way, the reason why...
And that's not such a crummy little puzzle. And the reason it doesn't happen with front-wheel drive cars is that it doesn't happen with them. Because the front wheels are turning and there's more brake applied to the front wheels. You get it?
I get it. Yeah.
Do we have a winner for this little puzzle?
We do have a winner. The winner is... Gee, how do you pronounce this name? And what is it?
I would say Tabor.
Tabor. Tabor Browder from New London, New Hampshire. And as you know, in New Hampshire, the motto on the license plates is almost the same as Bugsy Lawler's number plate. In New Hampshire, it's live free or die. And Bugsy says, eat free or die.
That was cruel and unusual.
And for being selected as the winner this week, Tabor, I don't know whether to say he or she, though. That's my problem. She is going to get either a beautiful Car Talk t-shirt or an autographed copy of our great mediocre book, which is called, Car Talk.
Anyway.
But I would like to give also another prize, because look at this great letter we got. Look at that. Look at that writing.
Yes, wow.
Dear Click and Clack, this is written in a child's scrawl. And this is the response to the previous puzzler. And it says, if you put a hole in a barrel, it will get lighter. My dad didn't have a clue. My name is Fiona. I am 6 years old, and my dog Lucky likes your show. And her father, his name is Garrett Scott from someplace in California, which I can't read. I think we should send Fiona a t-shirt also, because that's cute.
Great letter.
She's 6 years old, and the dog Lucky, it's another listener. Hey, we'll take anything.
Anyway. We have another puzzle coming up in the second half of the show, and this is a beauty.
Ooh. Yeah?
Yeah, beauty.
Okay.
So
I'm ready.
Hang in for that. In the meantime, we'll take a call. 1-800-332-9287. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Al in Tulsa.
Hi, Al.
Hi, Al. How you doing?
What's happening?
Well, Tom and Ray, I've got an interesting little problem here in my 1971 Opel GT.
Oh, yeah. We work on those all the time.
There was a day when we used to work. There were many days when we worked on Opel GTs.
There were many days.
1.9 liter engine.
That's right.
Is yours red like all the other ones were?
Mine's bright orange.
Oh, you must have had it repainted.
No, it's the original color.
Original color. I don't think I've ever worked on an orange one.
Yeah, the Halloween anniversary edition.
Yeah, so it's even got black trim instead of chrome. Yeah.
Isn't that swanky?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's neat, but it has one little problem that I'm yet to figure out.
Okay,
go ahead. I had the brakes completely rebuilt. A local company, Friction Products of Tulsa, did a wonderful job in rebuilding the individual components, and I put braided steel brake lines on it, put it all together with DOT-5 silicone brake fluid. It stops like it was a scared quarter horse.
Mm.
But I've got this funny little light on the dash, a red light. It's called a brake failure light in the owner's manual.
Yes.
And it won't go out.
Oh, ow, ow. Yeah.
It won't go out. I've tried disconnecting the switch up on the master cylinder, and that does nothing. What's wrong?
You must take the bulb out.
Don't you have the click and clack black tape?
Use black tape. I've heard you guys come up with that solution before.
Well, yeah. The bulb is probably attached to a sensor in the master cylinder, is it not? Is that where it goes?
Yeah.
Are there a couple of sensors in the master cylinder?
Just one that I know of.
One. Yeah.
Hmm.
Well, there's one switch. Now, I haven't changed that switch.
Well, that may be the culprit. Do you happen to know where I will confess that I don't remember these cars vividly, but a lot of German cars had the brake light switches also in the master cylinder. Volkswagens used to have that. And the switch worked, unlike most cars, where the switch is actually connected to the underside of the dash and is operated when you move the pedal. The switches were pressure sensitive, and they controlled the operation of the brake lights in the back.
Right.
But also, the
brake lights work fine.
Well, mm-hmm. That switch you have there may be for the brake lights. Disconnect that, son of a gun, and see if this light goes off. Does it?
No, he just said he disconnected it, and the light didn't go off.
You sure?
Yes.
You did disconnect that?
Yeah.
I heard him say that. Where were you?
I was.
Were you having an out of body experience?
Out of mind. No kidding.
Yeah, it's strangest thing. One of the manuals that I have about a whole batch of them. One of them says that some of the Opals are connected with that light. Also tells you when the clutch needs adjustment.
Ooh.
I found no sensors there, and I found no sensors on the handbrake.
Oh, in which case, that what's turning on this light may be under the dash. There may be a switch. I remember working on early Saabs. Well, it was early for me. I mean, Saabs were probably around a lot longer than me.
They were.
But I remember Saabs had an interesting brake failure light. It was a switch. It was attached to the pedal. And when the brakes failed and the pedal went all the way to the floor, it tripped the switch and turned the light in the dashboard on. I thought that was unique. For a company that was
You just had an accident.
It was renowned for its safety record. I thought that was a unique method of informing the driver that
he just crashed. You have just crashed. The light should say you have just crashed.
Right. Oh, you have 3.1 nanoseconds before you do. So,
right. And what you have to do is you have to untrip the switch if that happens.
And the reason it got tripped on is that your pedal went to the floor when they opened up the system and bled it. So under the dash is probably a switch. Look around, reset the switch, and you'll be all set. And if you can't, take the bulb out.
No, that's what it is. I'm pretty sure, too, that it's the switch under the dash.
Yeah, I am, too, and that's the right way to do it.
Okay. But
take the bulb out if you can.
Well, that's my project for this weekend, then.
All right, Al.
Good luck, Al.
See ya.
Let us know if it works.
Yes, indeed. Right. Indeed.
In fact, I bring that up only because I happen to have here a note. It says, I'll read parts of this letter. I know you don't like me to read mail, because this is relevant. Due to an utter lack of ambition for meaningful achievement in life, I've been listening to your show. Is the coffee good?
Oh, I'm sorry.
I've been listening to your show for many years. I've noticed that you often invite callers to call back with an update. For example, if you propose an experiment to distinguish between two sources of arousal, you say, let us know which one it turned out to be. If you suggest a part replacement, you might add, call us back if that doesn't work. write us a letter in a few months and tell us whether that works, blah, 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 blah.
And this person is wondering why we never cite any of these callbacks.
Bob Woolley is his name. And he says, after listening to another such invitation on today's show, it occurred to me that I've never heard a call that was a follow-up on your advice. I've come up with three possible explanations for this.
Yeah, I know what one of them is.
One, every caller received optimal advice, called or wrote back with gushing praise, and you're too modest to put such comments on the air.
That's the most likely one of the three, I'm pretty
Number
sure.
Number two. I'm sorry, B.
B.
Every caller received optimal advice, but they're all ungrateful cads whose unsainted mothers never taught them to write thank you notes.
That's a likely. That's
possible
second,
too,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Roman numeral three. They all later realized that they had been bamboozled and called to give you an earful, and you're too embarrassed to talk to them again. I'm having a difficult time deciding which of the theories is most likely, da-da-da-da-da-da. Now, interestingly, in the same batch of mail comes a note from Paul Doring from Rochester, New York, and he says, on a recent show, you advised me that I could eliminate the blue haze on the inside of the glass of my 1989 Mercure Scorpio by leaving the windows rolled down while the car is in my garage.
I was the one who recommended that, in fact. I remember.
I am happy to report that this suggestion has been completely effective. See that?
Holy cow!
P.S. How do you get mice out of a 1989...
We'll be right back with more calls and the new puzzler after these messages. Hi, we're back. You're listening to Car Talk on National Public Radio with us, Click and Clack, the Clapper Brothers.
I wonder, every week when you say, hi, we're back, I wonder if you were out in space, if you could hear the groan across these great, you know, isn't that over yet?
I hear it from my kids. Anyway, we're here to answer your questions about cars and car repair and why there are no British computer makers. You know why?
Yeah.
What?
They haven't figured out how to make them leak oil yet.
Hey, it's time for the new puzzler.
Does it have to do with the Siamese twins?
No, I'm saving that one. Pretty good, huh?
That is good.
Well, I have no choice but to read, I guess, this entire letter because...
Oh, no, we don't have time for letters. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da. What do you think this is?
No, I have to read the letter. First of all, it was so well written.
Fine.
Number one. And, there, and I could not do it justice by any kind of paraphrasing.
Okay.
Plus, it would be even longer if I...
I don't know how to make anything short.
No,
we know that.
I could probably cut down the time by just launching...
Just read the letter, will you? Just launch into it.
Right. Okay. Here it is. And I'll stop
today.
Along
Did you have
the
lunch?
Way and add a few parentheticals.
Sure.
You ready?
Yes.
here it is.
Yeah. Now, do we have to... Do we need pencils or anything?
No, you don't need pencils. You can just enjoy. The ambiance.
Yeah,
and
okay.
When the important stuff comes up, I'll grunt a little.
Okay.
My husband and I lived in Lagos, Nigeria, and worked at the American Embassy. That's why the letter is from the Department of State.
It's
the State Department.
I was afraid when I saw the envelope.
And we decided to drive to Timbuktu on vacation.
Where is Timbuktu?
I don't know where Timbuktu is. But it must be someplace in Africa. We'll find out. We'll get the, what do they call that thing?
Guess
the Atlas here. Out.
Yeah.
We had previously crossed the Sahara alone in summer and felt well qualified for this 3,000-mile Timbuktu round trip. So that's good.
It must be in North Africa because that's where the Sahara is. I know that much.
Okay, good, good. We had an 87-something or other Nissan Patrol, which was outfitted with lots of dessert goodies, one or the other, I can't
read. Rhino package.
Full Rhino pack. Oil cooler, sand track, shovel, compass, air compressor, 12-volt refrigerator, tools, spare parts, water, food, buffalo guns, all that stuff.
Yeah.
Extra fuel, tires, tubes, the whole bit.
We get it, yes.
We made it to Timbuktu without puzzling incidents. The last few hundred miles were over open desert with no road and with no other vehicle seen. Okay? They spent two wonderful days in Timbuktu. I even have all this bona fides here. Passports, Timbuktu is for lovers, bumper stickers, all this great stuff.
So this is a real story.
Yeah, that's why she sent all this stuff. This is, if you don't believe me, here's our passport. And, okay.
Yeah, okay.
You interrupted me. I was going
I'm
along
sorry.
Very
you were smoothly. You were moving right along.
I lost my place. I'll have to start from the beginning.
hear the groan across
my husband and I. Anyway, we spent two wonderful days in Timbuktu, learning clearly why it is not a common tourist destination, and then headed home via a different route. 100 miles later with
Tim... You say via. I say via.
Via a different route. 100 miles later with Timbuktu...
I say route.
Still the nearest town, a louder-than-usual impact against the underside of the vehicle signaled the arrival of potential disaster.
Oof.
Okay.
This sounds like it might be important. They were driving along, and there was a loud
boom
impact. Yeah.
My husband stopped to investigate, and from under the rear of the vehicle, he swore. He said something like, "Aw, shucks," and yelled for me to bring him a specific item. I got it from my overnight bag. This is the important part. If you weren't listening, you should
now
be listening now.
To listen. He asked for her for an important item.
A specific item.
Yes.
I got it from my overnight bag, she says.
Yeah.
And gave it to him, and within 30 seconds, the problem seemed to be solved. We drove on for about 5 minutes, and then my husband stopped to check the repair. Again, he said, "Aw, shucks!" But this time, he yelled for me to bring the same item from his overnight bag. Huh?
Ooh.
I gave it to him, and this time, the repair was made just as quickly and lasted the remaining 1,400 miles of the trip. So the puzzler is, what color was this? The puzzler is this. What went wrong? What happened?
Yeah.
What was the item my husband asked for?
Yeah.
And why did it work when taken from my husband's overnight bag, but not from my own? And it is signed Janine Jackson.
Wow.
From the State Department.
Janine, that is a beauty.
Isn't it? Did I tell you it was a beauty?
Wow.
If you think you know the answer.
I don't
want
know
me to
the
read
answer.
It again.
No. I know the answer. Don't read it again.
If you think you know the answer, I just want to take a stab at it. Send your answer on the back of a postcard or a $20 bill to Puzzler Tower, Car Talk Plaza, Box 3500, Harvard Square, Cambridge.
Our fair city.
Ma 02238. I'll repeat the address.
Why don't you repeat that? Because a lot of people don't get it.
All right.
We get a lot of mail saying, "I couldn't get your address because you said it too fast."
Right. I was going to send you $20 for your birthday, but I already sealed the envelope. Right.
Right.
Puzzler Tower, Car Talk Plaza, Box 3500. That's a 3 and a 5 with 2 zeros.
Yeah.
Harvard Square, Cambridge.
Our fair city.
Ma 02238.
Just one little hint. When he went under the vehicle, was he under the engine compartment or under the middle of the car?
If you were listening, I said to listen attentively to this.
I don't think you specified. He went under, you said.
From under the rear of the vehicle. He swore and yelled.
Oh.
Said, "Aw, shucks."
Under the rear. Oh, I missed that. I'm glad I asked that question. I bet both of our listeners didn't catch that.
If you want to call us, the number is 1-800-332-9287 or 617-353-6350. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Helen from Berkeley, California.
Hi, Helen.
Hi, Helen. How are you?
Oh, I'm fine.
How's everything in Berkeley?
Oh, it's great. And I want you to know that you have a fan club on this Berkeley campus of at least 5 people.
That's wonderful.
Isn't it incredible?
So what's happening?
What's on your mind, Helen?
Well, I have a 1984 cream-colored Mercedes 190E, and she's an absolute dream.
Does she have a name?
Yes, her name is Bichette.
Bichette. Of course, everyone knows what that means in English.
It's the love name of the Marshalin in Der Rosenkavalier.
Ah, how silly of me. I should have known that.
Wasn't that on HBO last week?
Yeah, I think Richard Jenny started it. Okay, so Bichette is a beautiful cream-colored 190E. I got it.
Okay.
And?
I've got moldy tires.
Mm. Originals, huh?
No. Michelin's.
How many miles are on the tires?
About 15,000.
Really?
Mm-hmm. I've never had this.
You mean mold is growing on the outside of the tires?
Yes. White, hairy mold.
No kidding.
Hairy?
Yeah, well,
yeah,
mold
like
can
the
get...
stuff inside a jack-o'-lantern, only it's white.
Like everything in my refrigerator. Gee, that's interesting. And I guess it's happening. You know the old expression, a rolling Mercedes gathers no mold.
Is this happening to neighbors' cars, or is yours an isolated incident?
I've never seen it anywhere else.
No, because yours is sitting there all the time because you never use it. I mean, 7,000 miles is nothing.
I know,
so it sits there for long periods of time, and that's what's happening. You have
Except that the mold appeared after I'd driven it.
Well, because it's a little-known fact, but mold needs some stimulation in order to grow. After you drive it and then you stop, that's when the mold really gets going.
Did Lavoisier discover that?
No.
I didn't think so.
No, you need to take this right to the biology department.
Gee, I mean, that's right. I mean, you're right there at Berkeley.
Yeah.
I suspect that it's only because it's sitting for so long.
Oh, yeah,
I
think my brother's right. I mean, these short little jaunts you do are hardly...
they don't even count.
Would count.
No, I do take it for long jaunts, at least once a week.
Yeah, but most of the time it's sitting probably in the shade.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm. Oh, yeah.
And it's exactly the conditions that mold loves.
Is the mold growing on all four wheels?
No, only on the two rear ones.
Sure, the two that are in the shade.
No, it's in the garage.
Only on the two rear ones. Uh-oh, now this introduces a level of complexity.
No, I know. It's if you were to back into the garage as opposed to pull in...
It would only be on the front.
It would begin to grow on all four.
Why?
Because it's on the floor.
What?
The mold.
The mold?
Yeah.
Oh, my. Did I see a movie about this?
Do you know that mold, those things grow everywhere. Those mold spores are everywhere.
Yeah.
Like
why
mushrooms.
Aren't they on the front of the car?
Because they just happened not to be in the front of the car. I don't know. Evidently, they're not everywhere. If they were, they'd be everywhere.
I can see the movie now. The
yeah.
Rosen Cavalier that ate Burke. I haven't any idea. I mean, I can give you an idea how to get rid of it. Make
yes.
yourself a nice little mixture of water and bleach.
Uh-huh.
And wash the tires down with it.
Wash them down and then armor all the tires.
Okay, I was going to ask you, is this going to hurt the tires or weaken them in any way?
Well, the bleach? Gee,
no,
I don't know.
The mold.
Mm-hmm.
I think the mold in the long run may throw them out of balance.
I would suspect the mold is not likely to harm them. But now that you mention it, I'm wondering whether the bleach will harm them. I wouldn't take our advice if I were you.
Okay.
Because I'm not sure that, I don't know how chlorine or hydrogen peroxide, both of which are bleaches, would in fact react with rubber. And I don't think it's good.
The bleach will not hurt. Try a test spot.
Oh,
yeah.
Great. So
on a neighbor's tire.
tire.
Don't use one of yours. Try a neighbor's tire and see what happens.
Oh,
you
okay.
may find out they turn white.
Yeah,
then
they may.
White walls.
You know, rubber is originally white. They dye it to make it black.
That's right. Everyone knows that.
Not everyone knows that. You didn't know that, did you, Helen?
No, I didn't.
I found out last week. Anyway, try something and let us know if anything happens.
Okay.
Well, maybe we'll read about it in the paper in 60 minutes. Thanks for your call, Helen.
Okay, I just want to say you guys are the two greatest radio personalities since the Lone Ranger and Tonto.
Ah, Kimosabe. Thanks, Helen.
Okay, bye.
I was at a loss for words.
I was too.
Thanks, Helen. Bye-bye.
Well, anyway, you've squandered another hour listening to Car Talk. Our producer, still digging spare ribs out of his desk from the Car Talk holiday party. We had a little scavenger hunt, kids and I.
We did.
See how many spare ribs we can hide in Dougie's desk.
I thought it was interesting that you put one in his Rolodex under the letter S.
No. R.
Ribs. Mm. Oh, I thought it was S for spare.
That's why I put the spare ones, but the real ribs.
Well, that's good.
Anyway, Dougie Berman is our estimable producer. Our associate producer and dean of the College of Automusicology is Ken Babyface Rogers. Our engineer this week is Gary Wallach. Our assistant producer is Jennifer Jiffy Loeb. And of course, as always, our technical advisor is Mr. John Lawler. Our public opinion polling is done by Paul Murky of Murky Research.
Nothing. I didn't say anything.
Our automotive medical researcher is Dr. Denton Fender. The chairman of the Car Talk Math Department is Horatio Algebra. The Department of Physics is headed by Victor Analysis. And the Chemistry Department is chaired by Max Solubility. Our director of long-range strategic planning is Kay Sarah, who I think, but I'm not sure, is married to Frank Sarah, and now she's known as...
Kay Sarah Sarah,
of course. Staff geneticist is Dr. Jean Poole. And our director of Far East Relations is Tai Ming Chain. Our distinguished chief counsel from the law firm of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe is Hugh Lewis Dewey, known at the Harvest Express in Harvard Square as Huey Louie Dewey, the guy who never pays a bill. We're Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers. Thanks for listening, and don't drive like my brother.
Don't drive like my brother.
See you next week. Bye-bye.
Car Talk is a production of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe and WBUR in Boston.
And although the board of directors cringes every time they hear us saying it, this is NPR, National Public Radio.